You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Hey, I'm Joe.
And I'm Joel.
From the Editing Bay here on the Next Wave Radio Network, and we've got something very fun for all of you Next Wave listeners. We've got our first live show coming up April 11th at the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano. If you're in the DFW area, we're going to be watching the live-action Dolph Lundgren He-Man movie.
Yes.
With a whole bunch of cool giveaways. We've got plastic swords to give to people so they can hold them aloft and call upon the power of Grayskull. We're also going to have little skull pencil erasers, all kinds of giveaways, raffles, door prizes, and some special surprises still on the way. We've also got a stand-up comedian.
Uh-huh.
And then it's all going to be followed up with a live recording of the podcast where Joel and I are going to tear the movie a new one.
Joe, that sounds fantastic. However did we get the sponsorship for this?
Well, it's thanks to our friends at Duncanville Bookstore. They're located at 101 West Camp Wisdom Suite J in Duncanville, Texas. They sell comics. They sell toys. They have board games. Not only do they sell these things,
yes,
but they will buy them from you.
Uh-huh.
So if you've got a bunch of crap sitting around that's taking up space and you're like, you know what, spring cleaning, or I could use a few extra bucks, or I want to buy some stuff at the comic shop but I don't have a whole bunch of cash on me, maybe I could trade some stuff in. All you got to do is call the guys up at 972-298-7546. Andy, Brian, those guys can help you out. If you want to check out the website, DuncanvilleBookstore.com, and you'll see them as well as Joel and I.
Yay.
At our live show, April 11th. For more details, you could check out our website. Joel, what is that?
That is editingbay.com. Not the editing bay, not edit bay, editingbay.com.
And yeah, right there, you'll find more info about the show. You'll find other episodes,
yeah,
of the show.
All of them.
But more importantly, information about our live show, April 11th, the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano, $5. And we're going to be kicking things off at about 7:30. Hopefully, we'll see you there. That once in any podcast since then.
Well, it's been a month since he...
What the fuck happened?
Like, we should do it now.
Do you think his
timely
brain just shut down? Because I know, like...
No, here's the thing.
When I get in front of the microphone, sometimes when we talk,
yeah,
I get so into, like, I have to, you know, anchoring the conversation, but also trying to actively listen, that I start to forget shit. Like, that's no mistake about that.
That's true.
I start blanking on stuff.
I've witnessed it, and I've experienced it myself,
yes,
so I know what you're saying.
So I kind of feel like, on one hand... Yeah, you know, let's come down on Travolta. But at the same time, I kind of feel like, dude, the guy's probably tipsy. He's had a few drinks. He's going up on stage, and he's in front of all these people. And it's not like Idina Menzel has, like, the most common name in the world.
I honestly don't think he knew who she was going into that. Like, he's backstage, and somebody's like, what is it again? What is Idina Menzel. Idina Menzel.
Idina Menzel.
All right, all
right. And, you
know,
so he's
trying,
like,
to commit it to
it in his head.
Menzel. Meanwhile,
and it looked
Ellen's
like he was squinting. So it looked like he maybe was having a hard time reading the
teleprompter.
Prompter.
Even if he could see the teleprompter clearly. If you see Idina Menzel written on a teleprompter, if you've never heard her name before, that's not going to help. You're still going to call her, what did he call her?
Adele Dazeem. I think the greatest thing about that video, if you go back and watch it, is you could see while he's, like, squinting and watching the teleprompter, he gets to the point where he says her name, and you see, just like for a split second, you see a little, like, a little bit of panic. You see one eyebrow start to arch up, as if, like, he's like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And in, like, a split second, he makes that choice. I'm going to say this.
And then immediately, like, does, like, a 180, walks off stage.
I love that he gives it, like, this little, like, honorable bow, like she's Indian. Adele Dazeem. It's amazing. So you know what? I say lay off of the guy. Could you imagine if somebody, like, when you make a mistake speaking, can you imagine if everybody in the country decided to just ride your ass about it
well,
for 3 days?
I it's hard to feel sympathy for John Travolta. He should have. He had 15 seconds on stage. That's all you got to do.
You only had one job.
You had one job,
John Travolta. So speaking of Travolta, he once did a movie with this gentleman that we're going to be talking about tonight.
We should have watched that movie.
Face Off.
Face Off would have been fantastic.
Face Off. But you know what? Face Off is infamous for being kind of a bad flick.
Almost intentionally so, in a Paul Verhoeven sort of way.
In a American John Woo kind of way.
Yeah.
It's really interesting knowing that, like, the same guy who did, like, Face Off
did
the he did, like, those great those great kung fu movies. Like,
oh, yeah.
Hard Boiled, those Chow Yun-Fat movies.
Because like, he did them in his language.
Yeah, exactly.
But where he could direct a little better.
You watch Hard Boiled, and that movie's really good. Like, story-wise, it's really solid. Oh, yeah. And it's a long fucking movie. But then you watch Face Off, and you're like, what the fuck is going on in this flick? What is happening?
I think he was taking it a little too seriously.
He was like trying to be a little too artistic with it.
Yeah, with the doves.
So that's a sneak preview of our Face Off episode. But what we're talking about tonight is this. I don't even think this movie hit the theater.
I don't even think we said the name of the show.
I don't remember it. Well, go ahead, Joel.
Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joel.
And today we're listening to The Editing Bay.
On the Next Wave Radio Network.
On NPR.
Do you feel better now?
I do. Let's get back into it.
Okay. So the movie we're speaking of tonight is Stolen.
Stolen, 2012, starring Nicolas Cage.
Well, directed by Simon West.
Did you know that name? I had to look it up.
Well, Simon West, he's done a bunch of action flicks. He did a couple of Jason Statham movies.
He did Con Air.
He did Con Air. That's where the love affair began with Nick Cage and stuffed animals.
So much so that he took 15 years off between that and this movie.
Well, no, he didn't, though.
With Nicolas Cage?
With Nicolas Cage.
That's what I'm saying.
But he did The Expendables, or was it The Expendables 2?
No, it's Expendables 2 that he did.
Yeah. So, I mean, the guy's done work, and you could tell, like, he has a specialty.
Yeah.
And he tends to stick with that specialty.
Also has a Tomb Raider on his oeuvre.
Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Thumbs up or thumbs down for Tomb Raider?
Thumbs down for the movie, thumbs up for the cover art.
Oh, I thought you were going to say thumbs up for Angelina Jolie.
No, and you
know
what?
Two thumbs up, if you know
what I
mean.
I'm not even an Angelina Jolie fan, but for some reason, I love the cover art to that movie. I love the poster to that movie.
Because it's an exact
gorgeous
replica of the PlayStation DVD CD. They come on DVDs?
Well, they came on CDs. on PlayStation. In fact, here's some information for our folks on 8-Bit. There's a Tomb Raider sale going on the PlayStation Vita market.
I saw that.
Like $2 for a Tomb Raider game. So yeah, just tell your buddies at the 8-Bit Gladiators that Joe said hi.
It's cross-promotion for you right there.
So, okay, this movie's Stolen. And obviously it starts with our main characters getting ready to steal shit.
That's right.
And Nick Cage plays this bank robber along with Josh Lucas and Malin Ackerman, who you would know as Silk Spectre from the Watchmen movie.
Yeah.
Josh Lucas from...
What is he from?
Some flick that he did with...
he's so recognizable, but I couldn't...
Who was it? Kirsten Dunst or... Who's in Sweet Home Alabama?
Oh, that's right. No, that's what is it?
Oh no, the chick that played June Carter in Walk the Line.
Oh Jesus!
See, it's happening.
This happens.
Reese Witherspoon.
There you go.
I thought you were getting ready to say LaToya Jackson. LaToya Jackson. Reese Witherspoon Josh Lucas were in Sweet Home. Yeah,
he was the love interest.
I guess, man. I just remember like trailers and stuff. But this is the first time I've seen the dude in forever. Like, oh, you know what? He was also in that movie Poseidon with Kurt Russell.
Okay.
And that was like the beginning of the end for his career.
I'm gonna have to take your word for that.
At one point, he kind of seemed to be a star on the rise. And then, like, just flattened the fuck out.
You think people realized before or after this movie that his acting skills maybe weren't up to par?
I think they realized before because this is a very recent movie.
Yeah, 2012.
Yeah, so...
And he's not very good.
No, he's not.
He's a horrible antagonist.
He's really not good at it. And I don't know if we are to blame him or if we blame Simon West directing or just the writing of the script. But, you know, I've watched Simon West action movies. And for the most part, I've kind of had a good time in the past with them.
You know what you're going to get.
Yeah, exactly. Usually. So when I saw his name attached to this project, I was like, okay, I think we're gonna have an action movie, kind of a balls to the wall action flick, and it wasn't quite that.
No, it was so lackluster.
Uh huh.
And my first clue, I judge movies a lot by their music, and maybe that's unfair, but music can either make or break a film sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And I've talked in the past about John Williams and how he's basically saved the prequels. You know, the only reason they feel like Star Wars movies is because of his music.
I think we're about to disagree here.
Uh oh.
Yeah, go ahead.
You don't think John? We talked about this before. Yeah, I know you didn't like John Williams.
No. Oh no. I'm not talking about John Williams. I'm talking about what you're about
music
to say about this
or
movie.
Saving music.
What you're saying about
you
this
liked
movie.
The music in this movie?
Well, are we talking about like the choices of popular music, or are we talking about the score?
Oh, no, I'm talking about the score by Mark Isham that sounds like an episode of...
It sounds like an episode of The Saint.
Yeah.
It totally...
It's awful.
And it doesn't... The music doesn't fit anything that's happening on screen.
It sounds like it was made in GarageBand on a Mac.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's not a real instrument in that.
It sounds like it wasn't made for this movie.
It sounds like a temp track, doesn't it? Like, all right, we're going to replace this when we get the budget, but just for now, we're just going to put in this music.
Right? It's almost like Mark Isham wrote a score for, like, a quirky spy comedy, and then like had nowhere to get put that music. Like somebody else used something else or whatever. And then they just took this music and put it on Stolen.
That's totally plausible. That happens more than you might think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are moments.
What do we got on the shelf here? Let's see.
There are moments in this movie where we're following the antagonist around and it's this quirky.
Boom, boom, boom.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we have the music, like when we're following around the cops, and it's this like foreboding evil music. Like it would be the villain's theme, but they're definitely the cops are not the villain. The FBI are not the villains in this movie. Okay, so
that was the first thing that jumped out at me that clued me into the fact that this probably wasn't going to be a quality film.
I think what jumped out at me first was when they cut to Nick Cage and he's listening to his Creedence. And they always make a huge deal with Nick Cage in his movies lately that, like, he's such a music fan. And, hey, man, it's my Creedence. It's what I listen to. I was like, okay, dude, Jeffrey Lebowski called. He wants his fucking Creedence back. let's leave that in the fucking 90s, you know? But so they sit there and they make a big point about, like, do we really have to listen to the song every time, all 7 minutes and 40 seconds of it?
This whole scene was, like, the worst exposition. This is how you don't write exposition in your script writing class 101.
This whole film displays how not to write exposition because we're, like, three quarters of the way through this movie and suddenly Josh Lucas is, like, spouting more exposition at fucking nobody, at Nick Cage's daughter.
That's great. Yeah, I love that scene.
Where he's like just injected her with something and then he's just like screaming at her before he throws her back in the trunk of the car. We haven't even explained like what kind of happens. We don't have to run down the whole movie, but let's explain like the basic plot here is Nick Cage and his crew are casing a bank.
And according to the script, Nick Cage, he's the best in the world. He's the best heist master or whatever they call him in the world.
Yes.
Best thief. That is not on display in this film.
No, so maybe, not at all.
Maybe his Twilight years are behind him, but
so
certainly isn't displaying any.
So they're robbing this bank. Meanwhile, they're being observed for the most part
by the entire FBI agency, apparently.
And
there's like 25 guys. They've got like AK-47s.
Oh yeah. And just the gratuitous amount of weaponry in this movie is ridiculous.
For these three guys?
So they the FBI's watching, and they decide to go in. They think that it's a diamond heist, that they're going to go after a jewelry store.
Right.
Turns out they've gone through a toy store into the vault of a bank.
Oh, clever.
And they're taking all this cash. And we, like, Chekhov's gun the shit out of a big pile of gold that, like, you would have to be Stevie Wonder to not see that, like, this gold is going to come back into play later in the film.
Well, the fucking villain, what was his character's name? Hoyt, I think. Is he Hoyt?
No, I don't think he's Hoyt. I think MC Gainey was Hoyt.
MC Gainey was Hoyt. Okay, so I can't remember the villain's name.
Isn't it, like, Dan or something that starts with a D?
He just gets, like, crazy eyes, and it's like a chain link fence between him.
I love shiny things.
Yeah, and he's just, like, close up.
Why
going
is
crazy.
There a chain link fence in a vault, in a bank vault?
You know, I guess they figure if you've made it through the 2 feet of steel to get into the vault.
Like that this chain link fence is going to deter you.
We're not going to try. Let's put some chicken wire up between just to keep the cash separated from the gold bullion. You know how it is. You don't want them mixing.
It's so ridiculous.
Everyone knows cash to the left, gold bullion to the right.
To the right. You're right.
The chalk outline that they drew down the vault didn't work.
I should have known. I'm sorry. I should have known. So in the middle of this heist, shit starts to go down. Shit goes wrong.
Yeah, in a bad way.
When they're taken off out of the bank, and there's some guy taking out the trash, and like Josh Lucas runs into him and then just wants to shoot him in the face.
Yeah, because he saw us, dude. He can identify us. He's going
to
know.
Yeah, and Nick Cage is like, no, dude, we don't have to kill him, but we don't need. This is enough money for all of us to retire.
Yeah.
It was that classic story, Joel.
He's the thief with
one
the heart
last
of gold.
Job. It's that one last job.
I tried to get out.
And he just didn't get the chance to do it. But yeah, the thief with the heart of gold. Don't shoot him. No, what are you doing? But they sat there like a couple of fucking schoolgirls and bickered about it while the alarm of the building is going
off. And the getaway van is like 20 feet away.
Right.
Like just down the alley. Let's have this conversation in the car.
Yeah.
I guess the rationality is if they're going to kill the guy, they got to kill the guy now. So that's the only place you can really have that conversation when you're about to out at 4 a.m. a poor black guy.
So Nick Cage ends up defending this dude, and he wrestles Josh Lucas back to the van, not before shooting Josh Lucas in the leg and then getting him in the van. And then he realizes, oh, fuck, I forgot the money.
The entire thing that they came there for.
And it takes him
$10 million.
It takes it, $10 million. It feels like it takes him 10 minutes to run down the alley to get the money and then start making his way back.
Fair to say that maybe Nicolas Cage isn't in the best shape of his life in this movie?
No, because like not 2 seconds later, when the getaway van takes off without Nick Cage, Hoyt decides to take off without Nick Cage and the cops show up, that's when Nick Cage starts doing like parkour in the alley in New Orleans. Where he throws the money at one cop, runs up the wall, and then
that.
Like kicks the other cop.
Gets
and then,
between the door, the passenger door,
and
like
then jumps up on the hood of the car and is just hiding there while the other cop is like looking under the car trying to find him, comes back up. He scissor kicks the other cop.
Nice.
And then like puts the money in the car, gets in the cop car, and takes off.
Stunt double, maybe?
Yes.
No, you don't think so?
I think there are stunt quadruples going on.
Well,
in
he looks like a mannequin in this movie anyway. Has he had some work done or some Botox?
They fool the FBI with a mannequin
exactly,
later
on
in the
because
film.
His skin is so shiny and just clay-like.
It looks like his flesh is falling off of his skeletal structure.
His little bottom pouty lip has never been protruding more from his face. He looks like a bulldog.
He looks you know, like in some of those cartoons, you've got like the old man chicken that's based on the...
yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Where he's like, oh, I'm a chicken.
Got the waddle hanging down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what Nick Cage is starting to look like now.
Can we stop down for a second?
Please.
And let's talk a little bit about Nicolas Cage, because we've been doing a podcast about bad movies for the better part of a year now. This is the first Nicolas Cage movie we've done, right?
It sure is. I think it is.
I feel like we can spend the next year doing bad Nicolas Cage movies.
Oh, yeah.
I got a little stat here. All right. So this guy's been working since 1981.
Steadily.
For the past, 34 years. Coming
on 35. Come on, dude. He lost his island. Didn't he, like, own an island at one point?
Is that what it is?
Yeah, the dude lost a lot of money. So
that's what this is,
right?
He can't
afford to say no to movies anymore.
Well, that would explain why he's done 80 movies. He's done, like, almost eight. I think he's in post-production on his 80th movie right
now.
He's
like a porn star.
In 35 years. Yeah, exactly.
Jesus.
The amount of sequels he does, also porn-like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, not Expendables. What's the... Well, he's got the National Treasure 3 coming out, I think.
And they also have Sorcerer's Apprentice 2.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, dude.
See, that's the problem with Nicolas Cage. It's hard for me to gauge his quality as an actor, as a personality.
Do you think leaving Las Vegas was a fluke?
You know, I don't even know that I'm really a fan of that. Movie's okay. His performance... is so like under he's an alcoholic in that movie, right?
Yeah, yes.
So I get the feeling in like normal Nicolas Cage looks like and acts like an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So I don't really know that he was doing a big stretch there
during that
role.
I mean, it is crazy to think that this guy who makes so many bad movies has Oscar gold sitting on his shelf.
For what?
For Leaving Las Vegas. He won Best
Actor.
Oh,
then he won that year, didn't
he?
Oh, that's right, because Elizabeth Shue didn't win. She was nominated.
Yeah.
That's a tragedy.
And you think, you know, it's very common with the Oscars that like a first time actor or, you know, someone gets nominated for the first time.
Yeah.
It's the first time you see them, you know, take the girl from
Jennifer
from
Hudson.
Precious, Jennifer Hudson, a couple of the nominees this year.
Yeah, Abdi Bagur.
Yeah, exactly. They get nominated because they're so new. And I think we touched on this a little bit when we talked about Christoph Waltz, that, you know, it was his first film and he got nominated for it as well. And then from there, you got to see some of his other films, and he basically kind of acts the same way in everything. Ooh. It's really easy, and a lot of people get, like, they're impressed. Like, oh, my God, it's their first time, and they got nominated. It's kind of amazing to see how easy it really is for these actors to get nominated the first time because you've never seen them work before.
Marissa Tomei has a Best Actress
Oscar, doesn't you've heard,
she?
Like, the conspiracy theories
no,
about that.
No, what's a conspiracy?
That it wasn't supposed to be. It wasn't her name in the envelope.
That they read the wrong
name. They read the wrong
intentionally
name.
Intentionally read the wrong name?
I don't know if
or
it
that
was
there
intentionally,
was a mix-up.
But there was a mix-up.
Who
that's,
announced
that's how
the
I,
name?
That's how I understand it. I can't remember.
Nicolas Cage.
I can't, yes.
That would be awesome. Comes around.
So he stole gold for somebody else. Because that's what he ends up doing in this movie.
Yeah.
He
well,
steals
that's
what gold.
Stolen.
But he steals the gold that we saw earlier because he does 8 years. In prison.
Yeah. Hasn't aged a day by the time when he gets out.
Still wearing the same clothes.
Exactly.
He's wearing the same thing.
Everyone
hasn't
else
aged
is caught in time as well. Malin Ackerman still looks like she's 29.
8 years he went to prison. He ended up burning the cash.
Or so he says.
Or so he says. So he burns the cash because he figures he'll do less time if there's no evidence.
That's right.
Which I kind of find it a stretch that they got him. They were able to tag 8 years on him. Without evidence of the crime.
Just for that, yeah. Well, they had him breaking in, and they had, I guess there's
intent
there.
Dude, breaking and entering and running from the cops, 8 years?
Yeah.
That seems kind of excessive, I think.
You get eight years for, like, selling weed, so.
But do you really serve all 8 years of that?
No, probably not.
No.
You're saying you think maybe he got a 20 sentence and got off on good behavior.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he did. Maybe he got a I just think that if your sentence, honestly, if he was sentenced 8 years for this crime, he probably would have gotten out on good behavior or something.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
You know, I know he led the cops in a high-speed chase, but...
Sure, there's some damage there.
There are people that get out early for worse, I think,
you know,
in the realm of movies.
That whole chase sequence at the beginning, when he finally gets busted,
yeah,
he really should have gotten away. I feel like he lost his momentum, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And just gave up way too easy. Like, almost like he wanted to be caught.
Maybe he did.
He was scot-free. And then he lets a couple of hobos in an alley block his way.
There was nowhere else for him to go.
I got it. I know, but he didn't even try to run. Like, he parks the car.
No, he didn't try to run. I think
and then he just, like,
tired
puts his
after
head
doing
down.
His parkour.
I guess so.
His Nicolas Cage parkour. I mean, he couldn't run. The bag, he explained that the bag weighed, what, like 70 pounds or something? All that money?
Yeah, 60 or 70.
So
we're right.
you can't run with all that. What are you going to do, man? You've got to go.
But he wasn't even running.
Jail.
He was in a car the entire time.
He was, and it was exhausting him.
Wow. All right.
Well, I mean, granted, some of the shit he did in that car. Let's talk about the things that they just do in cars in general, and people survive. The characters in this movie are Looney Tunes characters.
Yeah, no kidding.
They are seriously, like, there's a part where he ends up getting arrested.
Mm-hmm.
God, okay, I don't want to gloss over this. So he gets out of jail, and we find out that, like, you know, he's got his daughter. He wants to go visit her. He wants to build a relationship with her again. She has to go see a shrink because she has abandonment issues, and she ends up getting kidnapped.
Right,
she
gets immediately
kidnapped. By Josh Lucas's character
that everybody
thought was dead.
Yeah.
They were like, "Oh yeah, did you hear so and so died? Oh really, man? That's really a bummer." Well, it turns out he's not dead. He's a cab driver, which I kind of find it hard that in New Orleans nobody's run into this guy. But whatever. And he's got a fake leg. He had to have his leg amputated.
Well, he blends in with that fake leg and those tattoos
and
the
those
horrible
crazy
meth-like
eyes.
Teeth.
Yeah. And so he kidnaps Nick Cage's daughter because he wants his cut of their money.
8 years later.
And nobody, I know, right?
He's had a lot of time to think about this.
And so Nick Cage is now sent on this whirlwind adventure across New Orleans to try to get the money and track down his daughter.
Yep.
Okay.
That's the elevator pitch right there, right?
So when this kind of goes down, Nick Cage goes to see the FBI agent that took him down originally.
Right.
And is like, "Hey, this dude kidnapped my daughter. He wants $10 million. The dude's like, "Yeah, right. $10 million? Isn't that kind of the same amount of money?" This is played by Danny Houston.
Yeah.
Also,
I like that guy, too.
Yeah, and you've seen him in a bunch of movies. He was in the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie.
That's right.
He played Young Stryker.
Yeah.
And he plays a pretty decent character in this.
Yeah.
I pretty much enjoy him in just about anything he's in.
He was one of the few highlights of this movie, I would say.
And the guy who plays his second in command, I can't remember his name, but he was in that show, The Human Target.
He's on Human Target. And
which was directed by Simon West.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, the pilot.
Just making careers everywhere.
Right.
Nice job.
And so Nick Cage goes to see them, and they're like, "Dude, we're not buying the story. Get the hell out of here." That's when Nick Cage, like, beats the shit out of two FBI agents.
Yeah, taking
it
into his own hands.
Right? So at some point, he gets caught by the FBI again. They take custody of him. They put him in the car, and they're driving him back, and he's like, "You guys got to listen to me." And they're like, "No, we don't." And the phone starts ringing, and he has a rule. Like, he was given a rule by Josh Lucas.
Yep.
You have 8 rings to pick up that phone.
Or your daughter's dead.
Does your phone ring 8 times?
No, it goes to voicemail about 5.
Yeah, 4 or 5.
You're lucky.
8. 8 rings to get to the phone, and so the phone starts ringing, and he's like, "I got to answer that phone." They're like, "Whatever, not going to happen."
Yeah, he's in handcuffs in the back seat, we should mention.
So Nick Cage breaks his fucking thumb. Gets his hands out of the cuffs, then starts to beat ass on these guys in the car.
With a broken thumb.
The car runs into a concrete median.
Flips
the fuck over. Rolls about 4 or 5 times.
Yep.
The car behind it it goes up onto a concrete median, runs into a construction vehicle, and cradles itself in, like, the front of a forklift or something.
Yeah.
And that's when, like, Nick Cage is, like, coughing and, like, gets out of the car. He's got the phone. He's like, "Hey, yeah, hey, what's up?
Took you a long time
I'm
to
sorry.
Answer that
I
phone,
just,
Nick.
You know, it was in my pocket." I'm like, "Motherfucker.
You should be dead.
You and the two other guys in your car should be dead
right
now."
Well, that's supporting my theory that he's a mannequin now. It's all that plastic surgery. Shit just bounces off him.
Oh, my God.
Not a laceration or anything.
So The kind of punishment that just these people go through in vehicles alone is ridiculous. You know, you have that opening car chase where it seemed like they were beating the hell out of his cop car.
Yeah.
And then that sequence there, they also punish the shit out of Josh Lucas's taxi cab by the end of this movie.
That's true.
So I think that's kind of, if there was a huge budget on this, I think it went towards a lot of vehicles.
Well, Joe, I'm glad you mentioned that because there actually was a huge budget on this, or a huge for Nicolas Cage, maybe Simon West.
Do you have the wiki page up?
I don't have the wiki page up. I take extensive notes. Okay. I call the highlights, Joe.
Before you get into this, one of your extensive notes, uh-oh, do you know if this movie had a wide release or anything, or was it just straight to to Netflix?
No, this came out in theaters, but it was one of the smallest releases for a Nicolas Cage movie. I think something like 1,100 theaters. Is that a lot?
Oh, my God. They're not a lot, 1,100 right? Does not seem like a lot.
That's what I thought. I know there's like a 1 and a 4 in there somewhere. I couldn't remember. It was 141. It was really low. I should also mention critics and audiences alike hate this movie. It's like 16% on Rotten Tomatoes, 35% with audience, so them not much better. Made for $35 million. There's a $35 million budget. All right, so you got to imagine couple million went to Nicolas Cage, maybe another 10 for the cast entirely.
Yeah.
That leaves $25 million for
vehicles.
The stunts.
And you know they got like some kind of breaks shooting in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. This was one of the first. New Orleans is on a big push right now where they're stealing a lot of the L.A. and Vancouver and Toronto stuff. They got tax breaks going on down there. So this was one of the first films, I think, that was made entirely in New Orleans because of this initiative. So good on you, New Orleans. Way to do something.
Right.
Oh, that's awful.
So, okay, so it cost $35 million to make.
Do you want to take a guess?
Dude, I can't imagine this movie made $9 million.
Well, we're making history here. I think this is the lowest a movie we've ever reviewed has garnered in the box office. Unclear, because numbers weren't really released. But ranging anywhere. Opening weekend, we know. Opening weekend, it made $300,000. 300,000. Didn't even break a million, Joe.
Oh, my God.
This made 300,000 over the weekend.
Oh, my God.
It performed so poorly, they pulled the movie out of theaters after 2 weeks.
Wow.
That's why you and nobody else listening to the podcast has heard of it, unless you've turned on your Netflix and seen it there.
That's like what they did with Idiocracy.
Oh, that never even got a release, did it?
No, it did. It did.
Did it officially?
Ken, who used to be on the Joe versus Ken podcast, we went opening weekend of Idiocracy, and we were the only two people in the theater on Friday night.
But that's a situation.
That movie wasn't advertised, though,
for
shit.
Fox buried that movie. It's an embarrassment what they did to that movie. That is a classic.
Yeah.
Everybody should see that movie. Mm. I think it should be assigned viewing for high school students.
I agree, man. I agree. It should be read Animal Farm, watch Idiocracy.
Absolutely. Oh, that's a good double feature.
Yeah.
So I guess the studio didn't have as much faith
I don't
in
think
this movie after that.
The studios and I don't think the movie houses, I don't think they wanted to keep that movie in there. If they could throw something else, I could imagine a lot of theaters probably pulled it and threw like another showing of something else on, like what was big in 2012.
Well,
the Role Models, we just threw another showing of Role
Models. Well, it
came
out in September, so September is kind of you're right between, you know, the blockbuster summer movies and kind of the Oscar rollout movies.
But this is a February movie.
Absolutely.
At best,
it should
this
have
is
been
a February movie.
It might have done a little better. Maybe better than 300,000.
Yes.
If it was released.
Wow.
So ultimately, they say it grossed anywhere between 3 and 11 million. Still not making its money back anywhere near what they spent on it. So, unfortunate. But when you look at the finished product, you can see why it was so negatively received.
It's kind of. Here's the thing. Like, there are some action sequences in this movie that I'm gonna say they played out okay. I thought the movie was filmed very well.
It looks all right.
But for a Simon West action movie,
well, here's the problem.
I think it looks fine.
In 2012, when you can turn on any number of TV channels, you know, we've got AMC, we've got, what are the other, who does Walking Dead? Oh, that's AMC, too.
A&E.
There is some high production value, quality storytelling going on in TV right now, both in story and, again, you know, production value, the way they look, the way they're acted.
Yeah.
Any episode of CSI from the last 2 years beats the hell out of this movie.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you still have that escapism. I mean, you could say the same thing for that Liam Neeson movie, Nonstop.
Nonstop.
But people still paid to go see it. Mm. You know? And you know what? I feel like if you put Liam Neeson in this movie, because this movie's basically taken in New Orleans.
Yeah.
In fact, it's called Stolen instead of Taken. and it's probably, I wouldn't be surprised if it was trying to capitalize off of the popularity of Taken.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
I know, right?
The same formula.
But Nick Cage.
Get an A-list actor.
He's an Oscar winner.
That's right.
So, Wait, did Liam Neeson win an Oscar for Schindler's List? I don't know. Never mind. We'll look that up later.
Somebody find that out and post it on the Facebook page.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. It's a weak film, but I feel like it probably would have performed better if you just had a couple better performers in there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it could have been saved by better. Although,
let's say you put Liam Neeson or Bruce Willis in the role.
I was going to say you're taking my recasting.
Liam Neeson or Bruce Willis in the role of Nick Cage.
Yeah.
You've already got a higher gross. You're already getting more people in the door. And then, you know, for the bad guy, you could throw anybody in there, man. You could throw anyone in. But Josh fucking Lucas, he couldn't have been the only person available.
He's too much of a pretty boy, like, to pull off this heavy antagonist role.
He's like, I feel like he's the bargain version of, like, Ben Foster.
Everybody in this movie, everybody is here's the person you get when you can't afford this person.
Right.
Malin Ackerman, I'm sorry, I love her.
But she can't act her way out of a box.
She's a pretty face to look at.
Her breakout role was in Harold and Kumar.
Oh, was she in Harold and Kumar?
Where she was Freak Show's wife.
Oh.
Yes.
Aw.
Guys, go on in, get something cold to drink, fuck my wife, hug.
I do enjoy her work, though.
Yeah, no.
And her breasts.
I liked it. Dude, come on. I really liked her in Watchmen. I did like that movie quite a bit.
She's not bad.
And I thought she was all right. She played the role she had to play.
Serviceable.
Uh-huh. And I mean, Silk Spectre, people will argue as the day is long that Silk Spectre is like this key role to that movie.
Mm.
And it's not her story. She's just kind of set dressing to what's going on with Dr. Manhattan. But getting back to Stolen. you've got like the bargain basement version of all of these different actors trying to put on a bargain basement version of Taken.
Yeah.
And it's almost, would you say that this is like if when the Sci-Fi Channel tries to make like,
oh my God, this is totally popular, Sharknado.
Yeah. It's like Sharknado. It's like they're trying to capitalize on something else. Like how you have the Transformers movie comes out in the theaters.
Right.
And then like, they come out with Transmorphers.
That's right.
And it's kind of, you know, this just really low budget trying to do GoBots. The same thing.
It's like when you go to Walmart, and I remember in the 90s there, like when Disney was just on a run, they had Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin.
Oh, yes.
And you'd go to the DVD see, like, aisle.
The Walmart original, Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, but it wasn't called Beauty and the Beast. It was like, you know,
like Pretty Lady and the Hog Boy.
Exactly. Same thing with Aladdin. It was like Arabian Nights. You know, it wasn't actually
Arabian
Aladdin.
Prince.
And that was the... They must have solely been funded by grandmothers who didn't realize they weren't buying the actual Disney version.
Right,
because I got a couple of those DVDs
and from
grandparents. Conservative
Christian groups.
Yeah. Oh, I don't even think. No, I think they were flat out fooled. I think they went there to buy Beauty and the Beast for their granddaughters, and got snookered in by Walmart.
Yeah.
Because they put them right next to each other in the Damn you, Walmart.
So like, there's got to be like the generic version of Frozen sitting there right now, Frosty.
So somewhere in a Blockbuster, if they're still around, there's
I don't know. I haven't seen any.
Taken is right next to Stolen on the DVD rack.
All right,
coming to a grocery store near you.
So the very end of this movie.
We're jumping there already,
dude,
huh?
Is there anything you want to talk about?
I want to talk about the scene. So you're saying that the actors, you know, we got better actors. Maybe this movie has a chance.
Right.
I'm putting the onus on the director in a lot of scenes. Specifically the
God,
one.
I feel like I. Oh, go ahead.
Well, how about this scene where Josh Lucas, our villain, is driving around. He's got a little 8-year-old in the trunk. And he picks up a fare inadvertently.
Yeah.
Like he thought he had the vacant sign on. It was off or vice versa. And this Australian guy just hops in the back of his car. Hey, mate. The most stereotypical Australian just like says all the key things.
He came right out of an Outback Steakhouse commercial.
Really. Wait, I'm drinking some Foster's here. We met a couple of Sheilas. We're going to go throw another shrimp on the barbie.
You did really good at that.
Oh, thanks. I was practicing last night when I knew this part of the show was going to come up.
All right, so yeah, no, you've got that moment, but you can't blame Simon West for a guy.
Why? He's the director.
Dude,
yes.
If you want to blame, no, you blame the casting director on shit like that. Because if you want to blame like anybody for bad performance, the dude that plays the fucking dispatcher at the taxi cab company.
Oh, I like that guy. The Cajun guy.
Why do you like him?
Because I get the feeling he's the only person who actually lived in New Orleans.
That's why.
Uh-huh,
you like him because he's authentic. You like him because he's probably not an actor.
Nope.
He's probably someone who actually just lives there or works at that actual cab company.
I think he's the guy who passed the tax break in New Orleans to get the film shot there.
Shitty actor.
Yeah.
Does not need to be in a major motion picture. Yeah. He was really fucking bad.
Yeah.
He was so bad. So you can't... That's not the director's fault because...
No, you're right.
And
you're
I know, you know what? Because I'm kind of being a hypocrite here because I'll tell you, like, you try to work to someone's strengths. Somebody, you'll be able to, if you can figure out what someone's weakness is, you can figure out how to work that into your advantage.
Yeah.
But
I'm going to play your devil's advocate, though, because I was recently on the other end of that.
No, where you're right.
We were shooting some commercials and cast a guy who maybe wasn't up to the task.
Yeah.
And there's only so much you can pull out of that guy before you have to go, you know what? We're going to get two good takes out of them, and that's all you get.
Right.
So well, I understand.
You kind of did that with another commercial with a girl, too.
Oh, not because of you.
not because of me.
Joe, you're selling yourself short. No, you were the highlight of that show.
I was very short.
Oh, my God. Everybody had her lines memorized except for her. It was embarrassing.
Oh, my God. I said that wrong.
So is, LOL hashtag.
I because I've seen Simon West's other work, I have a hard time like going, no. You know what? This is his fault. I can't. I feel like the guy
knows.
You think
Con Air was well directed?
I think Con Air was directed for what it was.
I think he pulled those performances out of the actors. I just think you get John Malkovich and Steve Buscemi, and they're just going to.
And John Cusack.
Screen gold. Yeah.
You got John Cusack in there.
I think that movie's successful in spite of him.
It's a decent. But you know what? I enjoyed both Expendables movies. I will say that the second one was a little bit weaker than the first one.
Well, yeah.
It's not his fault. We'd already seen all that shit already in the first movie.
You're almost making my point for me. He got 12 well-known, well-seasoned action stars. You could like... You could sit him in this apartment right now and we would have a multi-million dollar blockbuster.
That's not... No, but what I'm saying is that's... That second movie was basically the first movie all over again.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost the same exact story. And so that's not his fault. He took on a job to direct these guys. He took on a job to direct these ego-driven action stars to do this kind of shit. Do you think working with Bruce Willis... Have you ever heard Kevin Smith's deal about working with Bruce Willis?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're working not only with Bruce Willis on this movie. You're working with Stallone, who brought these people together.
That's true.
So you're trying to tell me you don't think Stallone's going to have a big fucking head about this. Then you got Schwarzenegger, who was like the biggest action star of all time about 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And now he's come in here fresh off of being, you know, in public office for a decade and a half. And now he's coming on the scene. And then you've got these other actors. You got Jason Statham, who like chicks throwing panties at. And I don't understand why, because he looks like a guy named Uncle Ralph. I can't get why people are into this dude. But you've got all these people that are they're used to being the crown jewel of their own action movie.
Yeah.
And now they're having to share space with other people that came before them and the next generation that are coming after them. And you're trying to tell me that, like, he should be able to wrangle these people? That's going to be tough.
Okay.
He picked up the check. That's all he did. He came out. He was like, what? You want to pay me to babysit you guys?
Yeah.
Sure. All right. In that respect, he's the same as fucking David O. Russell when he made American Hustle.
Oh.
That's all David O. Russell did, man.
Well, all right. Fair enough, though. But
I don't know why I'm like vehemently defending Simon West.
But yeah, because now you're comparing an Oscar-nominated or winning, actually, movie now to Stolen, which is nowhere near gold.
Oh well,
I hear you.
I'm trying to defend my boy.
I hear you. To support that theory, I have a friend who worked on Last Vegas, that movie that came out with Michael Douglas and
Kevin Kline. Was Kevin Kline
is in it, and Morgan Freeman's in it. And he said Morgan Freeman was kind of a dick, or at least to the director, and basically said that he told the director, director's there to yell action and cut, and the actors are here to act, because he was trying to give him like some notes on acting.
Wow.
And let me tell you something, Sonny.
Guys, I'm going to tell you, this is why when you go see movies with like your favorite stars, and now, like when they do new movies now, and those movies aren't as good... It's because of shit like this.
Yeah, they've got a big head.
Because these actors start to get big heads. They don't work on their craft anymore. They don't listen to anybody. They don't listen to the person who's watching from an objective point of view and is paid to direct them to tell this story. Instead, they think they know what's going on. They think they know what's best for the film. And you know what? You're out of fucking touch. And then you end up putting out a product that isn't very good.
Shouldn't this movie have been called Kidnapped, by the way?
It should have been called Kidnapped.
I mean, I guess they steal... Some
they
gold.
Stolen.
They try to steal money at the beginning.
But they try to steal money. He had 8 years stolen from him.
Oh, double
Josh
entendre.
Josh Lucas had his leg stolen from him.
Well.
Everybody in this movie kind of has a little bit of something stolen from them.
Nicolas Cage's daughter had her childhood stolen.
Childhood stolen.
Her father stolen away for eight years. Wow. You know
and
what?
And then Hoyt stole away with the van.
All right, I've turned around. This is great naming.
All right,
horrible casting.
So
great naming.
When it comes to this movie, Before we move on to this other stuff, I really have to talk about that climax, the end of this movie.
The anticlimax?
The anticlimactic moment where he brings this, like, he brings, didn't he bring like a big pile of gold? Like,
he's got
like
this
melted gold.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wants to pay the guy.
Yeah.
Here's your money. Mm-hmm. Give me my daughter.
This was the deal.
And dude is like, Josh Lucas is like, no. Now I'm going to set this thing on fire.
Who could have seen that coming, Joe? Who could have seen the guy who's been holding this vendetta for 8 years against Nicolas Cage and kidnapped his daughter the day he gets out of prison wasn't going to just turn his daughter over when he paid him the money?
I thought that he was going to see the light and he
what
was going to behave like an adult this point.
I feel sheepish. I bought into it.
So they get into this fight. He puts lighter fluid and gasoline all over the car.
Yeah.
And then he lights a flare. And like Nick Cage is all, no. Nick Cage gets shot in the stomach.
As he's running.
And then is still able to like WrestleMania with Josh Lucas on the ground. Josh Lucas still manages to get that gasoline lit though.
Yeah.
Car starts going up in flames.
Daughter's in the trunk screaming.
Daughter should have died within 3 minutes of what was going on there.
She's right next to the gas tank.
She should have burned to death.
Or at least
in the back
suffocated
of that car.
From the smoke coming in.
But they're wrestling around and stuff, and Nick Cage ends up putting like Josh Lucas's face on the ground and he lights up. and then he gets in the car, starts it up, and his idea, instead
Nicolas
of just
Cage.
Like finding something
to get the daughter
to pry
out.
The trunk open, he decides he wants to drive the car into the water.
It's the worst idea ever.
Because if my daughter, I'll be damned if my daughter's going to burn, she's going to drown.
That's exactly the thought I had, too. It's like, it went from bad to worse.
Yes.
Nice job, Nick.
So he drives a car.
Hey, baby, good news, bad news.
You're not
the fire's out.
But
you have about 90 seconds worth of oxygen in the trunk.
and so he gets out of the car and he's starting to like try to He-Man the trunk open.
With his broken hand that he broke himself from Act 1.
Bleeding out of his stomach.
He's been
still
shot.
And then we see like the Jason Voorhees shot, which I think was supposed to be terrifying.
Before
but
this.
Instead made me fucking laugh like crazy.
Me too.
We see just the shot of a foot and an artificial foot tinkering down the dock.
Well, that part looked like Terminator to me.
Uh-huh.
Like that last scene where he comes back to life in the original Terminator.
So he's trying to open up the trunk.
It was
and that's
Jason
when
Black.
Josh Lucas, like, he creature from the Black Lagoon
yep.
up out of the water.
Behind Nicolas Cage.
How is this guy sneaking up on you? How is he sneaking up on you?
He's been burned. He's got third-degree burns all over his body at this point.
And he starts wrestling again with Nicolas Cage, wrestling with him.
How do you swim in water with one leg,
I
too,
don't
by the
know,
way?
But apparently Nick Cage finds his kryptonite by kicking the artificial leg out from under him.
There you go. Now
and
he's
that,
helpless.
Like, incapacitates him for a good, like, 3-4 minutes.
Just
so Nick
time.
Cage can get the trunk open and get his daughter out.
And then what happens, Joe?
And then
this is my favorite part.
And then, like, Josh Lucas decides he wants to get back up out of the water.
Yeah, this ain't over yet.
This is fucking ridiculous, this final fight here that's going on.
Yeah.
And Nick Cage takes the crowbar that he opened the trunk with and just fucking impales him
just
with it.
Runs him right through.
Runs him right through.
And then.
And then that's when Nick Cage throws him in the trunk.
Yep.
Closes the trunk and lets the car roll down to the bottom of the briny depths.
And conveniently, the car was stationary while he was trying to save his daughter from the trunk. But the minute Josh Lucas, the minute an extra 30 pounds.
It was a little too much weight. It's that appendage. Yes.
That appendage.
So they get up on the dock. And that's when Nick Cage suddenly, like, I think it was the adrenaline rush went away.
Yeah.
And that's when
he decided, I love you.
And, like, the FBI agents show up.
Yeah, in a helicopter.
Yes.
There's more money spent on the incarceration of Nicolas Cage and the saving of him simultaneously.
They get him on a helicopter, and she's like, you're not going to arrest my dad. And the guy's like, I don't see why. I think it was so-and-so that stole all that gold.
Thank you. I was perturbed by the reading of that line.
That was either
the last day of shooting or the first day of shooting, but I don't quite think I found his character yet.
No.
This guy really had a change of heart.
But surprise, surprise, spoiler alert, Nick Cage doesn't die at the end of this movie.
Oh, yeah. We come back, and there he is with Malin Ackerman and little daughter.
And his daughter, and the FBI guys are watching.
Still staking him out because of all of the gold that he stole.
It was 10
pounds. We got to get back to that scene here in a second. But, was it 10 pounds?
10 pounds
was missing.
Was missing.
So they're not going to shut this case until they get every last bit of gold bullion back.
Uh-huh.
So they're like grumpy old men in a boat a couple of yards away. They got the binoculars on. He's got the fishing hat on.
Yeah.
And there's this whole good cop, bad cop sort of thing going on where Nick Cage, they have the gold and he's about to toss it in the ocean or the lake.
Right.
And he keeps having second guess. No, should I? Should I not? And they're kind of, do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Do it.
Do it.
Don't do it.
Do it. And finally, Nicolas Cage tosses what we think
is
the
gold.
Last of the gold. And he, and the old the old cop's like,
he goes, thank you, Will.
Now I can now retire. I can,
no.
What does he say?
No. Now I can go back to living my life.
That's what it's it like, is.
What the fuck?
Nicolas Cage was his white whale that finally harpooned.
Well, he said when he first caught Nicolas Cage, that one line, he's like, my marriage or my wedding day, the birth of my twins, and now.
Today. He's like, wow.
These are bookmarked moments.
Yeah, and even, let's psychoanalyze that character, this cop, who after he spent his entire career searching him, finally gets him behind bars. And then is there the day that Nicolas Cage is released from prison to pick him up and give him a ride?
Because he wants the money. Yeah. He knows where the money is.
Been waiting for that $10 million. By the way, if you're going to secretly follow, you know, undercover, if you really wanted to figure out where the money was, wouldn't you like to stake out Nicolas Cage?
Or I would pull a face off and make someone make friends with him on the inside.
There you go.
And then like
not
they
wait
become
the 8
buddies.
Years.
Yeah, not wait the 8 years. Let's try to get that information ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe offer him a plea bargain.
I have a very hard time thinking that nobody had anything better to do in the past 8 years.
I know.
Than like obsess over when he gets out.
Well, they certainly weren't aging.
No.
I'll tell you that.
Nobody aged except for the daughter.
Oh, that's right. Well, do we know? Because we never saw her.
You know what?
The only
right.
time we're introduced to her is on a phone call at the
you
very
know,
beginning.
You know why, Joel?
What's that?
This whole movie?
Uh-huh.
They're all vampires.
No,
that's my explanation. That's why it took so much to get Josh Lucas to die.
That's a good point. You never see his reflection in the rearview mirror in the car.
You don't.
Actually, you probably
dude,
do.
He goes through, there is so much shit that he does to like hide his tracks.
Oh, yeah. That's quite a body count.
Like he is this mastermind villain, but he can't fucking run a dash. He can't run a 20-meter dash. Oh, my God. Yeah, I want to touch on this before we get into this other stuff. So there is a point where Nick Cage's daughter actually escapes. And, like, runs off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And kind of runs down this alley, but it's a dead end.
Yep, chain link fence.
And he ends up getting to her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Bitch, like, you can't outrun him?
Yeah, he's got a peg leg.
He's got a peg leg. You can't outrun this guy?
It's a pretty wide alley in broad daylight,
yes.
too.
She could have just juked to the right and then, like, spun and turned to the left and gone back the other way.
It's like my...
And then he wouldn't have even... He would have had to Austin Powers his way out of that fucking alley.
With the cab,
to,
right?
Yes, to get her.
It's like my defense against grizzly bears. Have I told you about my theory? You know how they say, you know, you meet a grizzly bear in the woods, you know, don't outrun it because they may look slow in movies.
Yes.
But they can always outrun you. They're more powerful than you think they are.
Make yourself small.
Yeah, yeah, that whole thing. I don't buy it. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to make myself big with my jacket because now I've gone from 185 pounds to what, 210
yeah.
by lifting my arms and my jacket up in the air.
Yeah.
My solution, find the biggest tree, like with the widest circumference, and just get on the other side and just kind of run around it. You know, he comes at you from the right. You go a little farther to the left. Like, I can tire that fucking bear out.
Are you saying that if you get chased by a bear, you're going to employ the Looney Tunes defense?
That's right.
And just chase each other until eventually the bear thinks you're chasing him around the tree?
I don't even think it's going to get that far. I think we're going to get a couple of swipes in. He's going to realize he doesn't have the arm length to get around the tree. And we could just go at this forever.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, you got that adrenaline pumping when a grizzly bear is about to take you down. I'll just go around that tree forever.
Yeah.
Because he can't run. What else is he going to do? I'm going to outsmart that bear, Joe. I'm going to tire him
what
out.
What if he's smarter than the average bear?
Ooh. what if you got attacked by Yogi Bear?
What if he's wearing a necktie and a hat? That means he's got a buddy waiting in the woods waiting for you.
For my picnic basket.
Yes.
Well, that was fun.
So yeah, no, I just couldn't understand. Like, if you're gonna, you shouldn't have introduced the fact that she did escape the first time,
yeah.
and that she was able to run away. Like, honestly,
that kid deserves to die.
She does.
You know,
she does deserve to die.
To
because
be fair,
she should have been smarter.
He was drugging her up, and so maybe she was a little lethargic still. From the
she
drugs.
Was able to run at a pretty good clip there.
That's true. Well, yeah, that's a good point.
And then he ended up having to shoot her up with the drugs again, and that's when he like, your dad took so much away. We're both victims.
You know, you called him a villain. And his character is very comical. Like that first scene when he kidnaps her to begin with and drugs her up, takes her to his lair,
uh-huh.
like his secret lair.
Yeah.
He looks like a Batman villain in there.
He
he's sitting
totally
in the chair.
Does.
He's got, you know, he's disheveled. He's got the peg leg. There's a disco ball like
yes.
rotating. So
there's
light
a
shimmering
carousel
across
horse.
Him. Yeah, exactly. He's straight out of a fucking Batman Forever Joel Schumacher
mm-hmm.
film.
I agree. So, okay. What did this movie? Oh, you know what? I want to go a different order here.
Okay.
What did this movie do wrong?
Oh gosh, you've thrown me in a tizzy.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go. Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
I think it hinges.
You think it all hinged on him?
Well, this movie doesn't
get made.
You
don't even think by Nicolas Cage standards, you don't think he did a decent job.
I think he... Well, and that brings us back to a larger question. Is Nicolas Cage any good?
He's it depends. Are we talking Raising Arizona Nicolas Cage? Because I loved him in that movie.
That was 30 years ago.
Right, but so what 30 years ago? But, you know, he was good in that flick.
He was good in that flick. Is it that, or was it that the flick was good around him?
Well,
that he finally found, here's a world in which Nicolas Cage fits in and is believable in this world and is comedic. He just doesn't fit into a serious like CSI heist movie like this.
You know, people are dying. I mean, you take a movie like Gone in 60 Seconds. That movie had a bunch of good performers around him.
Yeah,
and it wasn't as good. It wasn't as good. You know, and I think that hinged on him. I think his performance was weak in that.
Yeah.
So I'll have to say in the case of Raising Arizona, you know, the Coens know how to make a movie. I'll say that, but. You know, Raising Arizona was a brilliant flick, but I thought he was really good in it.
He is always entertaining, I'll give you that. Or generally, when his heart's in it, and he has a couple of Nicolas Cagey moments in here where he really gets to, like, go wild. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, in the scene where, like, his daughter's on the phone, you know, and he's talking to him, it's 4 a.m., are you going to read the dinosaur book? And Josh Lucas starts giving him shit. Yeah, it's the Care Bears, that's right. And he does this thing with his hands where he, like, whips his fist. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that was a Nicolas Cage moment.
There's another Nicolas Cage moment.
I have one, too. Which one?
Where Josh Lucas is like, so... did you have to listen to some Credence before you got started on this?
Oh, yeah.
And he yells at me, he's like, obviously not, because it didn't work last time.
That's right.
I loved that delivery.
Very Nicolas Cage. There was that, and then my favorite of all was near the end, we're in the third act, him and Malin Ackerman are underneath the bank. They're going back for that gold that was separated by the chain link fence at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
So they're coming underneath it this time. They've got a blowtorch, and their plan is to melt the gold, right? So they're melting. It's dripping down through this hole. Malin Ackerman is waiting for it to cool, and she's collecting it in this bag. So moments before, like, this is his last chance to save his daughter. Like, his daughter's, you know, right?
Yeah, this is it.
She's going to be killed.
It's down to the wire. He only
he's
had 12
had a
hours.
Confrontation. Yeah, exactly.
He put his phone on a train to Tuscaloosa.
It's all or nothing, and this is no holds barred. So Malin Ackerman's like, you know, the cops are coming. She's looking at her phone any second now. And he looks up with this crazed look in his eyes, and he's like, oh, what is he saying?
Oh,
I just want to see if I can get a little more
gold out of this.
But he's like so crazed. It's like, your fucking daughter's going to, let's prioritize here, Nicolas
Cage. It's almost like the face he was making in Ghost Rider when he found out that his face melts away and becomes the skull. He tried to make the face for Eva Mendes.
Yeah.
That's exactly the face that he made there.
So we went talking from bad moments, and now I've just looked at three of my favorite moments with Nicolas Cage.
Because you said Nick Cage is what this movie did the worst.
Well, no, it's the fact that this movie hinged on having Nicolas Cage save it, and that was their mistake. Again, you can blame it on the casting director, you can blame it on Simon West, any number of reasons, but ultimately this movie needed somebody to tie all the pieces together and be entertaining to watch, and Nicolas Cage... There weren't enough of those moments, and the script, again, any episode of CSI is 10 times better than the script and the acting.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to touch on what you just said.
Touch it.
Touch it gently, though. Script, there weren't enough moments. What this movie did wrong was it just wasn't interesting. It wasn't interesting enough to merit making a full-length feature film about this concept.
Absolutely.
When it was basically already done with Taken.
Joe.
It was rushed out.
Yeah.
You could tell it was rushed out. I can't really blame the writer because there's shit like this flying around Hollywood all the time.
Yeah.
I blame the fucking producers.
Yes.
I blame them for thinking, okay, let's throw some money into this and let's make this project. Taken made a lot of money, so let's do this movie Stolen about another a guy who loses his daughter and now has to use his specific set of skills to get her back. And it wasn't interesting.
No.
It wasn't interesting enough, and I don't think there was anything Simon West could have done to save it. I don't think there's anything Nick Cage honestly could have done to save it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we talked earlier, if there were stronger performers involved, maybe they would have gotten more people into the box office, but it still would have been a steaming pile of shit.
This movie feels like one of those movies that was just like coasting from its own momentum. Like, I get the feeling, you know, 2 years before they started shooting or a year before, hey, we've got Nicolas Cage. He's signed on. We've got this fairly strong supporting cast. They could have made something. We got this director, did Con Air, did The Expendables 2. They have all these pieces coming together, but something happened between them and when they first started shooting. You know, script got watered down, producers got you know, their fingers in the pie. And by the time they started shooting, this was just like, we're just going to go through the motions.
We've already
spent the money. We've already got the flight arrangements made.
We got that Mark Isham score.
Exactly.
We could throw on this.
That he pulled off a shelf.
Do you think this movie would have been more interesting if they had just like aborted the whole action angle and made a drama?
Like a psychological thriller out
of it? Well, not even a psychological thriller. Maybe, well, something a little more like that. But maybe just more of a drama about a father who was doing his last heist and ended up, you know, getting caught. And he put himself on the line to help his friends escape. And he did 8 years in prison, comes out, has issues with his daughter, kind of rekindles a relationship with that Malin Akeman character,
yeah,
and then finds out that like his buddy has gotten in with the wrong crowd,
betrayed him,
because he feels betrayed by Nick Cage. You can keep the whole missing leg aspect,
yeah,
but that it's not such a like a weird Bond villainy situation, but it's just more of a drama that like, yeah, dude, I blame you. It's because of you that this happened, and then you know he's just in a downward spiral, and it's about Nick Cage trying to, you know, fix all these things to make up for what he feels he did wrong, and then finally realize it wasn't his fault, the things that happened to Josh Lucas.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's his fault. It's his responsibility to build that relationship with his daughter again, and also this burgeoning love between him and the other female lead. That would have been a far more interesting film to me than this really weak action attempt.
I bet you're right, and I bet that's how the movie started off. Like, that's what they wanted to do. The filmmakers, the scriptwriter, the director, when they signed on, let's make that movie. And then somewhere in between, you get lines like Malin Akeman saying when Nick Cage is trying to talk her into this. She even says something like, that was the old me.
Like, yes.
I can't go back.
Yeah.
It's like, that's right out of, that's so cliche and has been done so many times.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, a script writer could have been more thoughtful about it. But you're right.
What do you think the movie did right?
Didn't we do that part of
right? You just the moments, the Nick Cage moments. So what it got wrong and what it got right are the same thing.
Are both Nicolas Cage.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I like the cinematography of this film.
It's not bad.
I thought it was a pretty decent looking movie.
You know what? The location. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
The setting.
I like that. I like the way they made New Orleans look. I thought that they did better with, I thought Tony Scott did better in that, that movie with Denzel where he goes back in time.
Not Training Day.
And I can't remember what the hell it's called. A Deja Vu?
Yeah.
Jesus, Jeff. God,
nice. Pulled it out of his ass.
I'm giving you a bonus tonight. Yeah, Deja Vu. I thought they made New Orleans look gorgeous in that movie, but they didn't do a bad job with this.
No. It's hard to fuck up Mardi Gras in the French Quarter.
Right. So, so we talked about a little bit of like the casting, and I already kind of tipped my hat recasting.
You said
stuff.
What? Bruce Willis?
I said either put a Bruce Willis in there or a Liam Neeson.
Yeah. I didn't go
and
too.
And I think they would be great. Other than that, I think Malin Akeman, you know, you'd have to find somebody who's kind of along those lines as well, but with a little bit more chops.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing an Anne Hathaway play that role.
Yeah,
if you're
going to
go the drama angle,
mm-hmm,
you know, but then you'd have to young up the guy who the Nick Cage character.
And that's okay because my casting for the Nicolas Cage character, if I recast, is Christian Bale. So let's get Anne Hathaway and Christian Bale back in this. I went with Christian Bale. It's a throwaway, but again, you need like an A-lister and somebody who can play this role, can do the action, but also believe that he's actually fearing for his daughter's life. And you know, Christian Bale can do no wrong.
Yeah.
He would never sign on to do this piece of shit, though, so you're not going to get him. What about the villain? Do you have any interesting ideas for that cartoony villain?
The villain, I kind of thought that I'd like to see Tobey Maguire.
Ooh, nice.
Play that role.
Against
you know?
Cast.
Yeah, to kind of be the that psycho. And I know there's kind of a stigma about Tobey Maguire. People don't like him. I do.
He's great.
Like, I'm one of the few people that when they cast him as Peter Parker in the original Spider-Man movie, I liked it.
Yeah.
He fit my idea growing up of what Peter Parker was.
He's an everyman.
Tobey Maguire totally fit that. And I was talking with somebody, and they're like, dude, but Tobey Maguire ruins every movie he's in.
What?
And all I could say was, Wonder Boys.
Yeah.
Wonder Boys is absolutely
That's
magnificent.
Great. Yeah.
And I think you only need to see that movie to know that kid has got some chops.
Oh, absolutely.
He's got some talent.
What was the Pleasantville, the black and white movie?
Yes, with Reese Witherspoon.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, he carried that movie somewhat.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Well, for the in lieu of Tobey Maguire, as you would say, I went back to him recently, but I'm going to do it again because I think James Franco has the right kind of sort of manic but the big smile and the light. He could play a fun villain. He would be one of those villains that like you would root for.
Did you see?
Uh-oh.
There's
Spring
a movie.
Break.
No. There's a movie written by Stallone, starring, it's called Homefront with Jason Statham.
Oh, no.
Total action movie. Yeah. Jason Statham, James Franco's the villain.
Oh, damn it.
James Franco.
And how does he do?
Is the villain in an I haven't seen it.
He's
got to
be fantastic,
the idea
though,
that
right?
he is the villain in an action movie fucking blows my mind.
Have you seen Spring Breakers or Spring Break?
I have it on DVD. I haven't watched it yet.
He's very creepy. He's playing a very un-James Franco-like character.
Yeah.
But he's so creepy. And so based on that performance, I like to see him in this.
Oh, cool.
With
cool,
a
cool,
little
cool.
peg leg and everything.
All right.
Miller and Ackerman, you said Anne Hathaway.
I said Anne Hathaway.
I'm going with, you know who Kate Mara is, if I say that name?
Yeah,
from
yeah.
House of Cards.
Rooney Mara's sister.
And fuck, for that matter, I'll take Rooney Mara, too. Any of the Mara sisters. You can put them together. We can have two Miller and Ackerman characters for all I care. I love both those girls.
Oh, yeah.
But Kate Mara, since coming off of House of Cards,
should
probably get her for this role.
I think for Hoyt,
yeah.
I decided because everybody thought he was dead. And so that way he could have a little victory lap. Wayne Knight. I would like to bring Wayne Knight, the guy who was Newman in Seinfeld.
Oh, shit.
that he could be the Hoyt character.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Yes.
Which one was Hoyt?
Hoyt was the
one,
MC
Gainey?
Gainey, the guy that drove off and then had the shotgun in the
I
apartment.
Went a little dark here because, that was a good role. Short role, juicy role. This recasting is always kind of like a pie in the sky dream fantasy. It's never going to happen anyway. So I went ahead and put Philip Seymour Hoffman in there. I know it's maybe a little too soon, but man, he could have nailed that role.
Yeah, he could have. You think about that villain role that he played in Mission Impossible
exactly. 3. And he's kind of fun. I mix his character from Twister with that character from Mission Impossible 3, where he's kind of like, fun loving, I'm kind of harmless, but then you find out he can really do damage.
He's got darkness.
That's kind of what that MC Gainey character was.
And then just imagine him crying in Boogie Nights.
I'm a fucking idiot.
If you have any fantasy castings.
Wait.
Do you still have
one
something?
More? What about the Danny Houston, the cop who's chasing him the entire
time?
Oh,
the Danny Houston character? I didn't even cast that one. What do you have?
Well, I'm going to put Tom Hanks in that role because we've already kind of seen him do that.
It's from Catch Me If You Can.
But I like he's a little older now. He's put on that, he's got that De Niro weight coming on now that he's getting older. The Captain Phillips weight.
You know what, though? But he's really good at putting it on and taking it off.
Yeah, like
Tom
in
Hanks.
Castaway.
Yeah, like De Niro, not quite as skillful.
He just puts more of it on.
No, that's a good one.
Yeah.
All right, so.
What about the daughter?
God, the daughter?
Chloe Moretz. Okay, that's
no,
good.
Not the daughter. You know what? I would do, God, what is her name? She was Kitty Pryde in the X-Men movies.
Oh, Juno?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is her name?
The lesbian.
Ellen Page.
Ellen Page. Thank
God,
you.
Thank you, Jeff, man.
We need to get
trifecta. No, we don't. We don't. I've already given him a podcast that he can work on.
Two, actually.
So Ellen Page. I think Ellen Page,
that's
just
good,
because the girl looked like Ellen Page.
That's a good role.
All right. So if...
Now we can wrap it up.
You have someone that you would like to cast a little fantasy casting action for this movie, go ahead and tell us about it on our Facebook page. Just look up the editing bay in the search bar, and that should bring up our page. And while you're there, you can also look up information on our live event coming up April 11th at the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano, where we're going to be showing Masters of the Universe, followed by a live recording of the podcast. $5 to get in, and we've got details on that also on our website at The Editing Bay.
I'm fucking stoked about
editing
that.
Bay,
editing
right?
Bay.
No,
dot
the.
Com. No, the.
Editingbay.com. And we would love to get more of your suggestions. This one was a suggestion.
It was.
And it was kind of a decent one.
We've had a few suggestions that have turned into episodes now.
It gave us a lot to talk about.
We're listening.
Yeah. So, again, if there's something that you want us to talk about, give us your suggestions. You know what? Catch back up with us next week. I don't know what we're doing. I was about to try to tease something, but I have no idea what we're going to do.
This is the conversation we always have after the microphones go dead.
Right.
So what do you want to watch? What's on Netflix this week that you can watch?
You know what? Send us your suggestions, and we'll get something going. And until then, my name's Joe.
And I'm Joel.
And we have been The Editing Bay. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks, guys. Running around.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.